welcome everybody to another episode of the Puck and Pod. My name is Joe.
My name is Brandon.
And I'm Paul.
Gentlemen, here we are. We're back. We had a little bit of a break, but here we are. We got some stuff to talk about. It's been a while now. It's been a couple of weeks, I think, since the World Series ended. I think we should probably get into it. Let's talk a little bit about the Blue Jays, how that ended.
Devastating.
it was super, super heartbreaking, man. Yeah. I mean, it's one of those instances where I'd say for the first time in a long time, for being a fan of the game and the team, seeing the united front across the country, like everybody you talk to was clearing their plans to watch the Jays, right? And you just, I haven't seen that in a long, maybe like the Olympics is the only other time. And probably hockey specifically, I would think. Other than that, I can't think of a time where, you know, you have that sort of togetherness and from everyone.
And I mean, in your case, this is sort of the first time you've gotten to see a team you support kind of make it this far, right?
In a meaningful series. Yeah. Like a really meaningful series.
So would you say, and I mean, Paul, you and I have had our hearts broken a couple of times. would you say like this was, because the way I look at it, so again, I'm coming from the outside kind of looking in. For me, this was a really fun experience getting to watch the Blue Jays kind of climb that mountain. I've seen the Canucks do it a few times, lose it in Game 7 twice now. How does it feel, kind of now that you've had some time to cool down, how does it feel now as you look back?
I actually think that I took the loss well, just in general.
Yeah.
I wasn't... If it was the hockey equivalent, I'd probably still be pissing and moaning now.
Yeah, you'd be like, let's not talk about it.
It's like, I don't know why it is, because I really do love baseball, but the passion isn't nearly as much as it is for hockey, and it always will be that way. Mm-hmm. If I would say my passion for hockey, it's like 15 out of 10, whereas baseball is probably like a 6 or 7 out of 10, if I can even put it on some sort of scale.
Yeah.
I don't know, it's probably horse crap, but
yeah.
I just, I didn't take it as hard as... maybe you'd expect. I think ultimately I expected the Dodgers to win anyway. And just to the fight that the Jays put up and the way they kind of grinded that series against the Dodgers, sort of being overmatched in a lot of areas, I was just so proud that they had all come together as one and as a unit and kind of unified that way anyway.
Yeah.
So I actually don't think even... other than maybe the very first night after they lost, I actually don't think it was too bad for me. I'm not really sure how, but thank you, because I can't have a mental breakdown, you know? So yeah,
no, for sure. How about you, Paul?
It was a historic run for the team, right? Like Ernie Clement put up the most hits in a world or in ever? A playoff
Performance
ever. Yeah. Thank you. Can't even think today.
Yeah.
but kind of the same with what Brandon was saying, like the emotional impact of, say, like the Toronto Raptors back in 2019. It seemed like the city of Toronto was, you know, very much in love with the fact that they won a championship. I was happy that the Raptors won. I'd been following them since their inauguration into the league. But it wasn't, I don't think it was as felt as the Blue Jays run here, because again, one, the Blue Jays were not expected to be a good team at all. The Raptors were one of the best teams for a couple of years before they finally actually won. Mm-hmm. So the Blue Jays were not expected to be a good team, and for them to kind of, I guess, really, they are Canada's representative of a team, to have a team make it that you're not expecting to do anything in those playoffs. It was worth the watch. You watched every minute. I watched all 7 hours of game two. You know, it's...
Yeah, me too. I watched every pitch, man.
That was a long game. It was a long game.
And even how, you know, how this one ended, while it was devastating. And surprisingly enough, I kind of saw it coming once the first home run was hit out of the three that ended the series for them. But... it was worth every minute and moment that you could watch the series.
Well, and it took extra innings for them to beat the Blue Jays too. So you consider the fact that the Blue Jays were no easy opponent for the Dodgers, yeah. for any of the teams that they played in the playoffs, but specifically for the Dodgers, who I think everybody was kind of thinking, okay, they're the team to beat this year, and sure enough, they were. But you know, for the Blue Jays to give them the difficulty that they did, I think goes to show that the Blue Jays are closer to winning a series, especially if a World Series. Pardon me, if they keep the players that they have.
Yeah.
If you come back next year, you know, we could see this team really, for lack of a better pun, hit it out of the park and actually do something. And I think that's the thing you know, and I hate to throw you under the bus because, you know, you did say at the beginning of the season how frustrated you were yep. with the management, but look what they put together, right? So now all they've got to do is take that next step. And one thing I will say too, specifically about the team this year, is that they had like a brotherhood going on, and yep. you could see it.
Yep.
Yeah. Lots of injuries.
And I think
through adversity.
And I think that, you know, other players from the outside are looking at that going, I want that too. So yeah, if they can keep the pieces together, you just never know what they're capable of.
Well, you hear guys like Max Scherzer, who's played for a couple teams, but he's been in the game for forever, and him saying this is one of the best places that he's ever played.
Yeah.
That says a lot.
It sure does. Yeah, it does.
One thing I do want to touch on that I'm just going to touch because I don't want to get fired up about it. But to one of your points you were just talking about, how that the Jays really did send the Dodgers for a loop a little bit, right? The thing I don't like is that I don't feel that a lot of the Dodgers players gave credit where credit was due. After the fact.
Yeah.
I think they went out of their way to take shots at the fact that they beat the Jays rather than say, hey, you know, like they were an incredible team. They did so many good things. Like the arrogance that ran through the media with certain players in particular.
Yeah.
I won't mention any names, Blake Snell, but yeah. The way that he was portraying, and I can't remember the Latin guy. He played left field.
Is that Rojas? No.
No. He was one of the guys that hit
the Pages.
No.
Pages?
No, it wasn't him. It was one of the guys
Kiki Hernandez?
Yes, thank you. he was outspoken about it, and he was very arrogant. And it's yep. like, man, your payroll is four times what the Blue Jays had almost. And it's like, you should have creamed that team.
Part of me wonders if it gives the Blue Jays a little bit more fuel to their fire for next year.
In turn, I know you'll probably touch on the managerial situation that we've experienced the last week or so. Mm-hmm. I think you know what I mean. I'll leave it to you. If not, I'll touch on it. But what I will say is I think that to that point, there's going to be a lot more people that say, hey, maybe Toronto is a good place to go play.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's going to be, you know, the missing out on Soto and Ohtani, and maybe that won't happen again. Or it won't happen for a while.
I wonder if even Ohtani's kind of like, hey, maybe I missed something here, going to this, taking the money instead of playing for an actual yeah. brotherhood. And yeah. you know, I mean, I'm not, you know, who knows, right? But in the end, like, yeah, it's very noticeable from the outside looking in.
The arrogance from some people south of the border is so high, they don't even realize that the Blue Jays are the only team in Canada.
Yeah.
And I don't know how that's possible, but it's the truth.
Yeah, no, 100%.
And you get some players that probably don't even really realize that. You know, you get a guy yeah. like Ohtani that goes, man, like, you don't go into that ballpark in Toronto and just play in front of 40,000 people. You're playing in front of 40 million people.
Yeah,
yeah. yeah.
Essentially, especially in those high-stake games.
That's right, yeah.
So
yeah.
The managerial thing I was talking about was Schneider was snubbed for
yeah.
manager
yeah.
of the yeah. year.
Which is very surprising.
How?
Yeah,
how?
Very surprising.
I mean,
now was this his first campaign as manager for the Blue Jays?
Third, I think.
Oh, third okay.
full season, I believe.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
yeah.
Okay.
Now I will say in this, and I agree with you. I think he was snubbed too. I think it's closer than it probably seems. Maybe for a couple of us, maybe friends and so on. Like I think John was deserving of it, but not that it was a runaway that he deserved.
Sure, that's fair.
He's made questionable decisions throughout the year in terms of player management as well as in the playoffs.
Yeah, yeah. So. And you know, certain moments where you're like, oh, I wonder why he's doing this now.
Yeah,
but to argue that point, all these other managers made decisions that didn't get them to game seven.
That's exactly
true.
That's true too. That's
exactly.
Yeah, no, and that's a fair point, right?
Yeah, but you're right, though. I 100% agree with you.
Was he in the conversation
with
the league? Not with him voting. Okay. The fact that he's in conversation, I think, makes it less, for me anyway, makes it less frustrating, but I get where you're coming from.
If he was farther down that list, we got something else going
on. I think the part of me wonders how much of the fact that they made it to the World Series plays a part in that decision.
I would think that
I know with the NHL, for example, like they vote on, you know, Jack Adams and all those other awards before the playoffs. So I wonder if any of that happens in baseball too, consider the first round or who knows, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's definitely an interesting thought. And I definitely agree that he deserved at least the conversation.
Yeah.
You know,
you said that you had felt the turning point for you was after that first home run in game seven.
Yeah, like it when it was a Rojas, I think, that got out. No, it was Max Muncy in the eighth. I'm like, this doesn't feel good, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Where he got that off Shane Bieber, but I kind of like, you know, the Dodgers are one of those teams that even if they catch a bit of a spark, that they're gonna roll with it. And they did. Like, they got a home run in the eighth, they got a home run in the ninth to tie it, and then a home run to win it, right? So I was worried after that.
I think it's PTSD from being a Leafs fan, giving up leads like crazy in important games. I actually thought it was the double play that ended game six.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
that was kind of the turning point for me. I thought, oh, it's not going to happen. This is going in the wrong direction in a hurry. That's kind of where I was like, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. They had every opportunity in that game to do something, and they didn't do it.
Yeah, it's scary.
Look at IKF, right? Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, you know, it's a lot of flack that he's been given for not leading off further off of third base, that he could have made it into home plate to win the series with Varsho's hit. Mattingly, at least, you know, stood by him saying, you know, we did ask them to stay closer to the base and so on, but it's a team effort, and you know, it was, he was doing what he thought was the right thing to do, and you know, I'm fine with that, but I do understand the criticism. He could have had a bigger lead off, and that extra step would have made a difference.
Yes, you're right. There, however, was a handful of former players that are now analysts that were basically, he did exactly what he should have in that situation.
Yeah.
We all want it because it would have made a difference.
Yeah.
So that probably clouds the actual baseball chess match.
Yeah, the analytics.
It is.
Yeah, yeah.
But tough one.
It's funny, you know, and in a lot of it too, you have to consider the fact that luck plays a big part of it too. You know, I think of Vladdy's almost home run that was about 2 feet away from going over the wall that, you know, would have won them the World Series, and you know, like that. Yeah. Or even the play at the end where, who was it now? Was it Barger who slid into home and then they ended up calling him out? No, where was it? There was a specific moment.
Barger was ended game six. That was where he was on second and
right.
He was
too late. But it was game seven where that play happened and they ended up doing a review and then they called him out instead of a safe.
Yeah.
And that was where it was like, is this what they're going to win the World Series on? And then they ended up losing the World Series.
I think that was also when Schneider challenged because he thought the catcher might have been obstructing the play.
That's right.
Ahead of time, it was kind of a Hail Mary.
And I mean, that's sometimes the way it goes too, right? It's just as a fan, you're on the edge of your seat constantly. And I was on the edge of my seat watching it.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, like I said, I'm not much of a baseball fan, but when it comes to playoffs and the run that they put out for me was exciting to watch.
Yeah, it'll be just interesting to see what happens now with the offseason. There's lots of discussions happening with players like Bo Bichette, obviously, coming back. They're talking about him coming back, but they're talking about going after guys like Kyle Tucker, who is expected to get a $300 million contract right now. I wouldn't mind Kyle Tucker, but I'd rather them maybe go after like more relief pitching, re-sign a guy like Chris Bassett, who says he wants to come back, but there's a possibility he might sign with the Mets, too.
I'd like to see Bassett back.
Lots of discussion for that.
Yeah.
Framber Valdez is a pitcher that's available. Like, I would rather see them fill out the team instead of get one of those big star players, which is funny because, you know, the Jays have been trying to chase after star players the last couple of years. So.
Yeah. After Bichette denied the qualifying offer, which I think was yesterday or the day before, I'm not so sure. And if they do sign Kyle Tucker, they're definitely not signing Bichette as well.
Pretty normal for players to decline their qualifying offers because it's much less than what they would get on the market. So
yeah.
I could still see him, but he'd be like Vladdy. He'd probably be up in the mid-30s per year over 10 years kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. But Bichette can do it all, right? The defensive side of his game is actually the worst part. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you by the looks of the way things went this year, you want somebody who's somebody you can rely on during the playoffs, right? Somebody who you know is going to give you the offense and the defense. And, you know, Bichette's kind of the all-around guy. The problem with him, of course, this year is that he was hurt for so much of it that you didn't get a chance to see that player come out.
Even in the playoffs, I don't think he was at 100%. I don't think a lot of the guys were, right? We saw what was happening with Springer, kind of in and out of the lineup, and yeah.
Showed his worth in game 7, though. That was a huge home run. Yep. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
Didn't hold up, but it still was a huge home run.
Absolutely. So. Yeah. Like I said, it was a fun playoff series to watch. If you're a diehard fan, I can see how it would break your heart and it would be, you know, sad to see your team lose in the end, but they definitely put that effort out there. And the one thing I think that no other team in the league is going to be able to say is they brought the champions to extra innings in game 7. So there's something there, you know, and I think you've got a team that is going to come in next year and really put that foot forward and hopefully be able to get over that hump. So it was exciting. And you know, do you guys have any final things you want to talk about when it comes to the Blue Jays?
For me, I'm looking forward to seeing what they do in free agency, which is basically now. So anytime in the next couple of weeks, we'll probably start to see some dominoes fall. And there's a couple of international free agents that have now, they're able to be interviewed and talked to and signed by teams now. Mm-hmm. So I guess we'll see what happens there. But other than that, I'm excited now for the offseason and see what they can build upon this.
Sweet.
I kind of have to laugh. The only gold glove for the team was the guy that's been had maybe played 20 games for the Blue Jays, and that was Ty France. Yeah. I would have expected Vladdy to get that over maybe Ty France, but I thought that was kind of funny.
Maybe it's just another, again, more fuel to the fire, right? We'll see. I don't know if necessarily the players are playing for that, but just the idea of being snubbed for something makes you just want to work that much harder.
Things like that, I think, help you in negotiating. When you're going for your next contract.
Yeah, I mean, look at Vladdy's contract, right?
It's a trophy on your shelf.
Totally. So I've been dealing with a little bit more heartbreak this the last couple of weeks, and that's with my BC Lions. They ended up getting knocked out by the eventual Grey Cup champions, the Saskatchewan Rough Riders, which it pains me to say. They are, to me, like the Edmonton Oilers of the CFL. Like, I just...
Or the LA Lakers.
Because they're everywhere. The problem with them is that the Saskatchewan Rough Rider fans are all over the place, specifically here in BC. Like, they move out of the prairies and come here and still cheer for their team, which I'm not blaming them to do that, but they just happen to be everywhere. So it pains me to say that they won the Grey Cup. But, you know, that just tells me, because BC actually put up a fight against them, and it was a very close match in the end. They did end up winning. Which, you know, congratulations to them, but it would have been nice to see the Lions take it to the end. But, you know, losing out in the West Final, which is the basically the conference final, it was tough to take. But next year, they're going to be better, I'm hoping. The problem with BC this year specifically is that defense. It was a struggle, man. They had so many ups and downs this year. I'm really hoping that they can figure out the right steps to getting a better defense next year. Maybe it means getting a new defensive coach. I'm not sure. But it was a challenge. It was a challenge to watch.
So I know that before the season started, you were pretty optimistic. They did not start well.
No.
Well, they had a couple of rough stretches. They were like 1-5 to start the year.
Yeah, you're right. No, for sure. They didn't start well. They It's tough because I've seen them start poor and end up winning the Grey Cup in the end. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The year that the BC Place had its renovation, which was 2011, they ended up going 1-5. Yeah, 1-5. Might have even gone 1-6 and ended up basically winning out when they finally started playing at BC Place. They played at the P&E, which was the field there was called... I can't remember. It was renamed after the field they used to play at in like the 50s and 60s and stuff like that. But anyway, so they played there and ended up losing every game because they were playing outside, which is like they're not used to doing that. They're used to playing in a nice, comfy stadium with, you know, 53,000 seats and stuff like that. But this year specifically was a tough one. I think we fans expected more out of the team defensively than what we got. You know, the defense really seemed to struggle. If you ask somebody like my dad, who's a diehard BC Lions fan, he would tell you that the defensive coach needs to be fired because it was always the same defensive play. It was always the same thing. And the teams were able to figure it out and get out of it, and they would make big plays against them. And, you know, it's never a winning recipe when you're just putting out the same formation every game, every play. So, you know, hopefully next year we'll see something better. The one thing I will say positively about the Lions this year, though, is their offense was really clicking. It was good. They scored a lot of points, and unfortunately they weren't able to take it all the way to the Grey Cup, but they made it to the West Final. They had a chance to win the West Final, so, you know, next year hopefully they can do even better.
So they if I'm looking at this correctly, they won their final 7 games of the year.
That's right. Wow. Yeah.
So
4-11 at one point.
And I will say the game against Calgary, which was the divisional championship or whatever it's called, the game before the West Final, they only won by like a field goal in that game. Oh, wow. So like Calgary put up an effort.
You're right. Yeah, they did. It was 33-30.
Yeah.
Now, up until that winning streak, where were they in the standings? Do you remember?
No, I don't remember.
Because that's almost half your season.
Yeah.
That winning streak.
Yeah.
So
yeah. You know, a lot of the games were they eked out wins and stuff like that. But again, it was defense that cost them mostly. It was never offense. Like they never had a hard time scoring points. The thing they struggled with the most was being able to stop the other team's offense. So
that sounds familiar, doesn't it, Paul?
But you know, in football, it's like, you know, you run with what you've got. You work with the players you've got, but you have to be able to be able to read the offense better. And I think that was the problem that they struggled with the most.
What did you think of Kid Canada this year?
Nathan Rourke, he's getting ever so close to that 2022 form all over again. Because, you know, the one thing I loved about Nathan Rourke back then, and you started to see it this year, was he was able to keep the ball himself and run with it.
I was going
to
say, you talked about that.
Yeah, you know, and also be able to sort of slide his way out of being tackled and things like that, where you're like, the pocket collapses around him, but he finds a way to get out of it. To me, that's the most impressive thing about him.
I guess with the team, they worked out the kinks under their new head coach too, right, with Buck Pearce.
Yeah, Buck Pearce, yeah. And,
obviously, it took probably a few weeks for them to get understand the plays and everything that he was setting up, but obviously a run like that to get to the Grey Cup
for sure, yeah.
Is a good start.
Yeah, absolutely. I was very happy with, like, overall, if you ask me how I feel about the Lions this year, I'm happy with their offense. Very happy with their offense. The defense is the part that I think that they really need to improve for next year if they want to do something. Because Nathan Rourke really, really needs a Grey Cup. Like, he's the kind of quarterback that needs a Grey Cup. Because he's, you know, arguably he's one of the best, if not the best, quarterback in the league. You know, there's other quarterbacks that are good, but they're not as gifted when it comes to being able to see the field and being able to make those plays on your own that I think he's capable of doing. He could run fast too, which is another, you know, skill that he has under his belt. So.
What do you think would help them, I guess, improve their defense in regards to...
I don't necessarily know if it's players or if it's just defensive, you know, structure. Like, you can say, you know, like you compare it to hockey, it's like defensive structure is everything when it comes to how you can turn the puck over and put it up ice. Well, in football, it's the same thing. If you can give them a 3 and out or a two and out, I mean, in CFL, it's two and out, and you get the ball back, then you now have a chance to score more points, right? Like, that's the whole point of the game. But if you're giving up big plays and you're causing the other team to get points against you, well, obviously that's hurting you. Yeah. So really, yeah. defensive structure is the key. So
I was going to say, it would probably be hard to pinpoint necessarily individual players when you've got, yeah. what, 11 on your defensive line?
Yeah. Yeah.
At a time?
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, you're really, other than your analytics coach and, yeah. your defensive coach, can you really sit there and pinpoint every single person's,
yeah.
decisions they make when, you know, blocking, etc.?
Exactly. And actually, you know, there are players you could call out. I don't have their names off the top of my head without looking it up. But there are certain players this year who were rookies on defense that made some amazing plays, like interceptions. There's this one guy, and I forget what his name is, but he came into the team drafted by the Lions, famous for making incredible interceptions. This one guy basically did a one-handed catch interception, basically in the end zone, catches the ball, grabs it, and runs out of there. You know, it was just incredible.
Was that Carter Jr.?
Yes. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
He won, actually, the most outstanding
rookie. Right. Yeah, and Nathan Rourke won Most Outstanding Canadian and Most Outstanding Player for the year as well, which is really awesome. So, and then Matthew Betts as well, I think, won most. Is it
defensive player? Yeah.
Defensive player, yeah. So, yeah, pretty incredible. I mean, when it comes to individual trophies, I know that they have the players. It's just a matter of making sure they have the right structure to get the job done. More than anything. And I think you could say the same about the Blue Jays, right? And the Leafs and, you know, the Canucks and the Flames and everybody else.
Like, I was going to say here, when we move on to our next topic here, let's try to get some positivity.
I know.
Because this podcast is
just bummer after bummer after bummer. And we've got a lot of depressing stuff to talk about. I'm looking at these two teams in particular on your wall here. The Nanaimo Clippers, the Nanaimo Buccaneers. The Buccaneers are doing really well this year. Yeah. They're actually doing the Clippers are doing really well this year too. However, the last few games, the Clippers have been kind of struggling defensively.
Yeah.
And I think it's been frustrating to watch because I for those of you at home don't know this, I work for the Nanaimo Clippers as the public address announcer and the DJ. So I get to watch these games every day, and I watch them play the Prince George Spruce Kings. And it felt to me like they were taken advantage of. The Spruce Kings really just sort of, it was control after, they were controlling the game more than the Clippers were. And it just was really sad to see. I mean, the shots were the same in the end. It was 30 shots for 30 shots. But I think that was deceiving more than anything. And I think that's the thing, you know, when it comes down to it, it's like you talk about defensive structure, and I think that's really something that the Clippers needed last night. So, so it is a lot of sad news that we're talking about today. But, we talked earlier a little bit about the Raptors and their, you know, triumphant season of 2019. How are they doing this year compared to then?
Well, they've gone from a depressing start to having like a 5-game win streak now.
Hey,
I think they're 10-5 now.
There's some positivity. I'll take it.
I believe they've won 9 of 10.
Nice.
Yeah.
Of their last.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
that's awesome. In basketball, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's you can do it. Like, you can get on runs like that, right?
Yeah.
And that's, you see teams like Golden State, they do it every year.
Yeah.
Right. So. So Ingram was their big offseason. I mean, not offseason. I guess
trade deadline
last year. But he didn't play because he was injured.
He was injured, right?
Yeah. And then they signed him to an extension before he even played.
Yeah.
So $40 million a year. What are you seeing so far?
He can space the floor really well. Like, obviously, he's not, I'd say, superstar level, like, say, like a Kawhi Leonard or a LeBron James, even Wembanyama, or however you pronounce his name.
Yeah. the giant, 7'14" or whatever he is.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
But he's,
that's 8'2", isn't it?
He's definitely that star caliber player that they probably have been missing since Kawhi Leonard. I'd say he's been a great addition for the team. Barnes had a bit of a statement game the other day. You know, he basically took over the game against the Cavaliers.
Yeah.
So,
which prompted some very interesting comments from Sam Mitchell.
Yeah.
Did you hear them?
I didn't, but I know that there was a lot of.
So I'll just say what he said, and then I'll move on. Speaking of Kawhi Leonard, Sam Mitchell, former coach of the Toronto Raptors, thinks that if Scottie Barnes can keep developing and specifically develop more his three-point shooting, he could be a better player than Kawhi Leonard. That's what he said. Yeah. So pretty high praise, but anyway.
Well, Mitchell's always had a soft spot for the Raptors.
Of course.
Too, so. But I'd say like everyone's kind of working together. Like Barrett's been pretty good. There was a lot of talk about maybe possibly trading him in the offseason. Glad that they kind of held on to him. Yeah. I think there's more of a talk about Quickly maybe being possibly traded at some point in the future, just because he's a good point guard, but they're kind of missing that kind of Kyle Lowry-esque kind of point guard.
Well, they should trade him quickly then.
And there's talks about them maybe thinking about acquiring Ja Morant, who's pretty good.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I was kind of looking at some of the stats earlier, and it's quite a collective effort, which is nice. They've got four players that are basically 20-plus points a game, just about, statistic-wise. I'd like a little more out of Ingram for the money he's making. He is second on the team in assists per game, though. So, I mean, he's quite the well-rounded player, which is what they need, of course. I mean, who knows? It's still early. They're only 15 games in. So by the 30-40 game mark halfway through the year, maybe he is averaging 26, 27 points a game, which is kind of more the realm I'm expecting as kind of a more casual basketball fan.
Yeah.
But they're catching eyes. They are, I'm not saying kicking ass and taking names just yet, but they're progressing in the right direction. A lot of their younger players, I've watched a little bit this year, and not just the Raptors, but a couple of teams here and there. Just, I've had a little bit of extra time off lately, so I've just been kind of scrolling through the TV guide a little bit. TV guide, wow. You know what I mean. And I'm younger than you guys. But just watching a little bit here and there, and it is just astonishing to me how dominant three-point shooting has become in the NBA. Yeah. And that's why you're seeing some of these 130 to 128 games that you just didn't see 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Like ever. If you had a 100-point game, that's pretty phenomenal, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's that's one thing that I've noticed about basketball in general. And I actually think that the Raptors aren't one of the better three-point shooting teams as of right now.
Definitely not.
So it's crazy to think that if they can develop that a little bit more, like I mentioned, you know, Scottie Barnes being one player specifically.
Mm-hmm.
I know that I was looking at stats earlier. The guy they just drafted, Murray Boyles, he's actually got like the highest three-point shooting percentage on the team. It's like 54% or something, but he hasn't played much.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's little things like that.
Well, you got guys like Grady Dick, who's known to be a three-point shooter. He's probably shooting well below average right now.
Yeah.
He averaged about 14 and a half points last year. He's averaging half that right now. Mm-hmm. Again, beginning of the season, lots can change, but even his three-point shooting is only 34%. It's not very high. A guy I've really liked in terms of his playing and his shooting is the Sandro Mamushkevali, I think. That's how you pronounce it.
I love listening to you try to pronounce names.
If it's any consolation, I wouldn't have been able to do it either.
That was very impressive.
Mamushkevali. Bless you.
Mamu Kalashvili.
Okay, you were way off.
Something. Sandro.
We'll call him S. We'll call him S.
But
for
he's
now.
Again, he was averaging, you know, just above 6 points last year. He's averaging above 9 points, and he's had a couple of games where he's in, you know, decently high double digits and shooting threes. So
I actually believe he does have the highest 3-point percentage on the team.
Yeah.
I think it's around 54 or 56%.
It's so interesting how, like, you know, I was listening to one of the radio sports shows today, and they were talking about the Raptors. They were talking specifically comparing, say, basketball to baseball, hockey, like other team sports in particular. And basketball is one of those team sports where you can pick up a player, and I think of Kawhi going back to 2019, you can pick up a player and then just have it change the trajectory of your team. And it's really interesting because it is a team sport, but it's like that one player has those different skill sets that improve the play of your team so much that it can change the way your team either is winning or losing.
Yeah.
Yeah, athleticism and body build
intelligence
too. All of that play a huge part. That's why LeBron's been so dominant.
Exactly.
Because he can encompass all of it.
He's a freight train.
Yeah, he could probably play till he's 50 and still score a decent amount of points.
My wife, by the way, she grew up a Lakers fan, right?
Nice.
always hated LeBron. Always hated him. And then he came to her team. And she's like, aww. I still hate him, but like he's on my team.
It's like William Nylander that way for me.
I think of Brad Marchand if he played for the Leafs. Like, you know, you'd be like, hate him, but like, thank God he's on my team, you know?
Maybe.
Or when, you know, when you're watching the Olympics or something like that, right?
I hear you.
When he scores, you're just like, all right.
Yeah, damn it.
Good thing about the Raptors right now, because there's that mid-season tournament that the NBA does now. The Raptors could be the first team to clinch a spot for right now, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
So whether they win it, we'll see. But
I'm not going to lie. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah.
There's a mid-season tournament that the NBA does now.
Really?
And you win a cup in the middle of the season.
Okay.
It's what is it about, though? Is it like a...
It's just like a...
Like a league tournament?
It's like a boasting
kind tournament. Kind of like a Four Nations, but like...
Yeah.
Okay.
Really?
Yep.
That is...
But it's between the teams, not...
How did Lakers won it last year.
Okay.
And...
I had no idea, but
I'm a real casual basketball fan.
You're more of a fan than I am when it comes to basketball. I love basketball. I played basketball growing up. I stopped watching it when the Grizzlies left. Yeah. So, like, for me, the idea, like, I like basketball. I watched 2019 when the Raptors won, but for me, like, I'm a very casual fan. Yeah, absolutely. So I had no idea they did that either. Yeah, but
First one was last year.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, hey, and they're the first team to clinch the tournaments, so that's kind of fun. Yeah.
All right.
That'll be fun.
Yeah, it's exciting.
Positivity. Are we ready to move on to some more?
Yeah, before we do, I would like to just touch on, not basketball, actually moving on, if that's okay with you.
Yeah,
I want to talk about two things in particular, because right now is a very important time. As we record, this is a very important time for these two sports. I'll start with soccer, because we've got the Vancouver Whitecaps right now going into the next round of their playoffs versus the LAFC, which is a pretty big deal. The Whitecaps play on Saturday, which is the 22nd, I believe, this week. So this podcast will air a couple of days after the first game is played. It's a pretty big deal. They've sold out the first game. So the 53,000 people in the stadium to watch game one of the second round of the playoffs. They beat it was so long ago now, I'm forgetting who they played. Dallas FC, I think, in the best of three. So they won the two games and were able to take on, now they're able to take on LAFC. They're not going to have an easy time of it, but it'll be a fun series to watch. The other thing I want to mention in women's sports in particular, the Vancouver Rise women's hockey team, they won their championship recently. Literally this last weekend. So huge congratulations to the Vancouver Rise. That's, I believe, if I remember correctly, it's the first championship they've had, and they won the first one. So that's really awesome. And continuing with women's sports, I'm sorry I'm being so fast on this. We don't have a lot of time for the episode. But the PWHL starts their season tomorrow.
Nice.
Tomorrow is the first game. Vancouver and Seattle are going to play their first games. I wanted to touch on them because we haven't had a chance to discuss even the fact that they have team names now.
I hate both of them.
I love both of them. I love Vancouver's. I both love Vancouver. So let me just, I'm being a fanboy, but I'm not being a fanboy for a second. Vancouver Golden Eyes and the Seattle Torrent. Seattle is getting a lot of, from what I'm seeing, they're getting a lot of pushback on their logo because it kind of looks like, one person said it looks like a sanitation department logo, which I think is kind of funny. It's like a big S, but it looks like a river flowing. And so, yeah, they say it kind of looks like a sanitation department.
It's very mid, as the kids would say these days.
Vancouver Golden Eyes is literally like an eye, and it's like a yellow eye, and they're named after the duck. The Golden Eye Duck. I don't know if you're familiar with it.
Not after the N64 game?
Yeah, no, I would have expected after James Bond on there. So, yeah.
No, they wanted to keep it specifically BC, and these ducks are home, like, are found more in BC than anywhere.
Have you seen their logos?
I've seen both.
Yeah. So the Vancouver Golden Eye, I actually love Vancouver's logo. I think it's awesome. And their colors are great too for their jerseys. traditionally with the PWHL, this is only the
opposite of that. Yeah. It's crazy.
So traditionally, I'm trying to get through this fast, but traditionally in the PWHL, this is only the third year of the league. The first year of the league, every team wore a jersey with their city name across it, right? So Toronto had just Toronto across theirs, you know, Ottawa, same thing, et cetera, et cetera. So this year, because we've got the expansion teams, Vancouver and Seattle, each team is going to have their team name across their jersey throughout the whole year. They're not going to wear their logos on their jersey until next season.
Sure.
There's rumor that next season will be – there are going to be even more expansion teams next year. So they're saying upwards of 12. Right now there's only, I think, 8 teams.
Yes.
So that's 4 more teams basically. So it'll be really interesting to see what happens. Very cool. Yeah. Here's a good sort of – uplifting thing about the league in particular. Tomorrow's first game for Vancouver and Seattle, it's sold out, playing at Pacific Coliseum. That's 15,000 people.
Wow, nice.
Are coming to that game.
Yeah.
Which is incredible when you think about, you know, the elevation of the sport, the elevation of the league, what it's doing. When you compare it to how, say, New York, they have their team called the New York Sirens. Traditionally, they get very poor attendance at their games. You're looking at maybe 2,000 people every game, which is not very good.
No.
Average attendance for most teams is about 7,000.
Right.
So when you compare that, you know, 15,000 people for the home opener for Vancouver and Seattle, it's going to be a lot of fun.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm really looking forward to it. I'm going to follow the team all year. I'm very excited to see what happens, and I'll follow the league too, but I'm very curious to see what happens with Vancouver.
Yep.
They are predicted to be one of the best teams in the league. So
I am going to make a super high attempt to get on the Vancouver team,
yeah. Which is very hard to train
for the first time ever. Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about our teams. I know we're going to get a little bit more depressed after this.
I actually think we're out of time, Joe.
Yeah, that's right. Well, well, you know, we tried. So let's start with the Leafs. Or do you want to start with the Flames?
The Flames are still kind of, like I said, a bottom-dwelling team. We're at about a quarter of the way through the season now.
Just about, yep.
I think it's safe to say at this point, just... you might want to sell a little bit. There's lots of talks about trades and stuff right now. Like Rasmus Anderson's been around, and Kadri both in trades, and technically both with the Leafs too. Actually, funny enough,
true. The Leafs are in every like. To be fair, every year the Leafs are in talks for somebody.
Yeah,
like that's the rumors always, right? Every year it seems like
it's because they always have to get better.
Star player on this team rumored the Leafs are interested. You know, it's like yes, of course they are. Every team wants to get better. Leafs are always going to be interested if it's a center. Pretty much Vancouver and Toronto are going to be the guys looking for
it.
That's what I'm hearing right now.
Flames did pick up John Beecher off of waivers, so former first-round pick from Boston. So he's not really, I guess, acclimated himself in Boston, maybe because of the culture that the team has there. I don't know. He's technically got a lot of skill. He's a good two-way. High draft pick. I think he was 14th, I think, in his draft. So he might be a good fit. Might allow them to start moving some pieces out if they do decide to tank. Not that a team wants to tank, but, you know, when you're at the bottom of the league at this point, you're better to maybe try to get one of those top three spots at that point in the draft. Because you can get a generational player.
If you, say, trade away somebody like Rasmus Anderson and you end up getting, say, second overall, that defenseman who's rumored to go second overall under McKenna, that would be a pretty nice consolation prize.
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. It's you know, and I think you're right. I think the problem, it seems, with Canadian teams is we're always so scared to make that move.
Yeah.
There's always like that chance of the fans not showing up.
And they were expected to be that team last year. They weren't expected to make be
and then
missing
they
the playoffs by 1 point. Well,
yeah. they just missed the playoffs by one point,
but they weren't expected to be that good. So, you know, it's kind of a flip this year. They were expected to be better and they're not. So right now
the Flames are sitting at 15 points. They're at the bottom of the Pacific. They're not at the bottom of the West, though. The Predators actually are sitting at... I stand corrected. Predators have 16 points. So Flames are sitting at the bottom of the West.
Another disappointing
the
team.
The Canucks now. Yeah. The Canucks are another disappointment. Unfortunately, with Vancouver, it's funny because I'm actually conflicted when it comes to Vancouver. I am happy with how they're playing because they're beating teams, but they're not beating teams consistently. And with all the injuries we have, which is the same issue the Leafs have, with all the injuries they have, they're missing some of their better players. Yeah. So I have a hard time judging them on structure and things like that because of the fact they don't have their key players in there. They still need, they desperately need a second line center. They desperately need it. But for some reason, they're not making that happen. They did just pick up David Kampf, obviously, after the Leafs.
Second line center right there? Come on.
Yeah. Well, he's definitely not second line center. But yeah. I will say this about him. Like, he's a very good defensive player.
Very good.
You know, he won 73% of the faceoffs he took the other day, which is impressive when you consider what, you know, you have in all your other centers. But
not a great start, though. -3 in his first game. With
You know what? The goalie they had playing for him was Yuri Patera, who's an AHL goalie. Yeah, so, you can't really blame him for that. However, and also the other part of it is that Vancouver is also their defensive structure again doesn't seem to have that consistency that they need, you know. It's tough to say what they need to get going. Vancouver's currently sitting second to last in the Pacific, not in the West, in the Pacific specifically. Yeah. They're actually only a couple, like 4 points away from they're 4 points away from second in the Pacific. But they are currently second last in the Pacific at 20 points.
Three of the bottom six teams are Calgary.
Exactly.
Vancouver and Toronto.
And to be fair, like right now is, you can't compare those teams at the moment because everybody's so tight in points.
Yeah.
Right? Like I said, 4 points away from second in the division. The Ducks right now, surprising everybody, at 27 points. Avalanche have 31 points in the West right now, so they're leading everybody in the West. So
leading the league.
If you think about it this way, though, with the way the standings are right now and how they've only played 20 games, if either Vancouver or Toronto went on a 6-2-2 run, they'd be third in their division.
Exactly.
Nobody's running away right now. Yeah. It can still, it's going to happen. There will be teams that all of a sudden just take off. But both of our teams, as disappointing as it is, they're still there.
Yeah.
I would say the Leafs probably have maybe a little bit more opportunity than the Canucks to climb, based on the talent level that they have. They still need to execute that, but they're still there. And I know we're super frustrated with the Leafs specifically. I just think because the expectations were so much higher, I think they're probably a little muddled in Vancouver in a comparison, so might not be as much of a drop-off right now. But again, 6-2-2 run, and they're right there.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, I mean, anything can happen.
And I mean, honestly, that's kind of the point I'm trying to make. Like, it's November. Yeah. We have so much time. There's like, 60 more games?
It's 60 ridiculous. Games left.
Yeah, like, it's like, there's so many more games to play that anything could happen. I mean, we looked at, you know, the St. Louis Blues winning the Stanley Cup in, 2019?
Yeah.
And they were last in the league in January. Came back and won the Stanley Cup. So, you know, it could happen to anybody. I think it's just a matter of figuring out your team, getting those injured players back again. Thatcher Demko, right, for Vancouver is a huge key to that component.
Yeah.
Key component to that. In terms of making it work. So, you know, you're relying so much on Lankinen right now. You can't criticize the team for what's happening because they've been in the games. Yeah. You know, they just finished a road trip against Carolina that they went to overtime win in. So they got a point out of that game. Went on to beat Tampa Bay 5-2. Then they played Florida and lost that game 8-5.
I watched that whole game.
Yeah, they still scored five goals against Bobrovsky. Lost 8-5 in the end. I'm okay with it. I was okay with that loss because the fact that you got five goals against him, like you put you know, a good effort out there. So, you know, they're not the worst team in the league based on the way they play.
The only thing about that is they were leading twice in that game.
Yes.
That's the only frustrating.
Well, and I mean, you know, that's exactly what that's kind of expected, you know, the way I see it. And then, you know, you look at it and like I said, Patera, who is your goalie in that game, you're relying on somebody who's never played for your team in the NHL. So, you know.
I have a bit of a rhetorical question for you because I actually don't have the answer. But do you have any guess as to how many games the Canucks have played this year with their full roster, like their expected roster?
So what are we at, like 16 games now or something?
No, I think each team has played just about 20.
Hang on, I think I actually have it here in front of me. Vancouver has played 21 games. I will say they've played 18 games, like with injured players, with people missing.
Yeah.
Because I think it was something like game 2 or game 3 that Bluger got hurt.
Right.
Right. So, yeah.
I was going to say, I know in Toronto it's been one game. Yeah. They've had one game all year with their expected full roster.
But sorry. Was the question how many games they played with their full roster?
Yeah.
So 2 games.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's been around the entire league, though. Like,
it has. It's like been
all the teams are, I mean, that, are suffering significant injuries.
It's not just our teams. No, like, that's for sure.
So tonight when the Leafs play Columbus, there was $35.6 million on LTIR tonight.
Crazy.
In salary.
I think it was something like the Avalanche are the only team that hasn't had any significant injuries, right?
Yeah.
Something like that. There might be another team in there somewhere, but yeah.
It's... Well, you know, Leafs right now, we're there without Matthew Nice, Nick Waugh, Anthony Stolarz, Austin Matthews, which could be back on Saturday, but there's no confirmation of that. Chris Tanev, Brandon Carlo. You have...
And I think Scott Laudon is playing tonight for the first time in 2 weeks.
And then you have Vancouver, Bluger's out, Hedl's out, Demko's out, and Forbert, I know, doesn't play all the time, but still...
He plays all the time when he's injured. When he's not injured, I mean. Like, he's a bottom-pairing defenseman, but he's a defensive specialist. Like, he's really good at... And penalty killing is what he's known for, right? But, he's an important piece to the whole thing. Garland has been injured twice now this year. He is back with the team skating. He's apparently good to go. So they play tonight, and apparently he will be playing. So,
I'll list some players. Like, Victor Hedman's out right now.
Yeah.
Kapokako's out right now. Jared McCann's out right now. Jeff Skinner's out. Ricard Raquel's out right now in Pittsburgh. You've got Thomas Chabot out in Ottawa.
Yeah.
Matt Rempe and Will Borgo, not huge in the Rangers, but they're good character players for them. Jack Hughes is out with New Jersey right now. You've got Patrick Laine out and Kirby Dach in Montreal. Vladimir Tarasenko in Minnesota. Drew Doughty with the Kings right now.
I didn't even know Tarasenko was with Minnesota. That's hilarious.
Drew Doughty, that's new then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he's out right now.
Actually, I believe he had a procedure done.
Yeah. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins
like a week ago or something.
Oh.
Yeah, Drew Doughty.
Yeah.
Ryan Nugent-Hopkins is out.
RNH is out, yeah.
Wow.
He's out. Thomas Harley's out. Matt Duchene's out right now. Boone Jenner's out.
Did you say the Tkachuks? Both of them
both out? Yeah, they're both out.
Did McDavid get hurt? There was that play where he ended up falling on a guy's skate or something and like sliced his leg.
Nothing about him being on injury reserve right now, but yeah,
I maybe. Lucky then if that's the case. I didn't know that happened. Well.
Nick Foligno in Chicago, Kotkaniemi in Carolina. Again, not big name players, but again, they do contribute to the team, right?
So, absolutely.
Charlie McAvoy, Elias Lindholm.
McAvoy would be out a while, eh? He just had jaw surgery.
Ugh.
Crazy.
I mean, I'm not complaining necessarily, but I don't like the player.
Year.
Holy
what
smokes.
A weird year. Like, really weird.
Lots of injuries.
According to Patrick Waugh, Mikko Rantanen very soon.
Yeah. so we don't have time today, but we really have to talk about that. Another thing I want to talk about in a future episode is JT Miller.
Oh.
But we don't have time to talk about it today. We literally only have about 5 minutes left. But yes, the fact that he's the captain of the New York Rangers, the fact that he's getting a lot of ridicule right now.
He's standing around a lot.
Literally standing around a lot. Yeah. It's so funny. They showed a picture of him. Maybe we're talking about it now. They showed a picture of him wearing the sweater they're going to wear for their Winter Classic game. And I thought to myself, oh, look at that. JT Miller standing around doing what he does best in the picture, right? But anyway, we'll talk about that in a future episode. I just think it's really interesting to see that he's getting the criticism that he was getting here in Vancouver over there. A lot of players who watch East Coast games didn't see him do the things he was doing here. And this is the one criticism he was getting in Vancouver.
It's not so much the play, it's the player.
Yeah, like just not back-checking. You know, a guy would be going for like a breakaway, skating right past him, and he's just standing there watching him go. And then they, you know, lose a game in overtime because he's not skating. And he's like, I don't understand why everybody's so mad. It's like, because you're not doing anything.
you're backstabbing like, everything.
What are you paying? What are you being paid this money for?
It's going to Robita Island pretty soon.
Literally. The captain of the team, guy makes over, you know, $8 million a year. and he does, you know, he does sweet FA.
Well, I mentioned Max Domi because it's kind of the same thing. The guy is like, there's no defensive play. It's non-existent.
Yeah.
You know, he stands around. A guy like Philip Myers just got kicked out of the lineup because he was standing around. He's a big guy. You know, like it's, you can't stand around in this game. You got to play a full 200-foot game.
You really can't.
Or you're useless to your team and you're going to cause your team to lose.
Especially as the captain, because you've got to lead by example, right? But
yeah.
You think.
Yeah. You know, boys, we are running short on time, so let's just finish up with a couple more facts about our teams.
I got a couple of just factors, and I want to say they're not necessarily excuses about the Leafs, but things that I've noticed so far that could be contributing to their lack of success. Other than the obvious, losing Mitch Marner, 100-point perennial player, probably top three winger in the NHL.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be a difference. Up to 6 regular spots turnover from last year, mostly at forward. Both goalies not being there, really. Wall on random leave and Stolarz kind of...
Yeah, that was hard for the team.
Seems like Stolarz is battling something because he hasn't played like himself all year.
Maybe it's a mental thing.
Yeah, I don't know. The Wall thing is confusing, but I guess we'll never know. Their team defense is just generally bad. Like last year, it was 6th best in the league. Limiting shot attempts, high danger chances, etc. And they were able to shut teams down and hold on to leads. Like they'd be up 3-2 in the third and you just knew that they were able to lock it down. You were confident. And it's just not happening. And the health. Like obviously if they can get healthy, I think I'm not saying that's gonna make them a playoff team or a dominant team, but it's not gonna hurt. That's
now,
for sure.
Now Mitch Marner, I'm not trying to dig a knife into you guys, but Mitch Marner, 21 points in 19 games right now. 21 points in 19 games.
Yeah.
4 goals, but so that's a lot of assists on his end.
It always is.
Yeah. It always has been.
He doesn't score more than 25 goals a year usually.
Yeah.
Yeah. I expected that.
But let me ask you this. We're so close on time here, but let me ask you this. How much do you think the Leafs are missing that on their team?
I actually think they're missing his all-around game more than they are his 100 points.
Yeah,
interesting.
To be honest.
Well, the reason I find that interesting is because of the fact that he was so heavily criticized for the lack of back-checking and things like that in the playoffs.
No, it was never the back-checking for him.
No, I remember Marner. The specific moment of, you're right. You're absolutely right, actually. It was his character around the team. You're right.
Marner is not spelled N-Y-L-A.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
I do have the two mixed up. You're right.
honestly, Marner being a puck carrier, penalty killer, that being able to get out of their own end is something the Leafs can't do right now. Yeah. And Marner was able to facilitate that better than most people in the league. So it's just little things like that that go so far.
Mm-hmm. And I'll say this, you know, Craig Berube demands this, play a complete f-ing game for once.
That'll be it.
More editing for Joe to do. Paul, any final thoughts on the Leafs or the Flames?
Again, my thoughts with the Flames are just, you know, keep putting an effort in, but it's okay if you're not going to be the best team this year. And the Leafs, I wouldn't be surprised if they don't come out of their slump and they do end up being a bottom team. I'm hoping it's in the bottom 5 because at least they don't lose their first round pick. But if they can turn it around, it's like I just said, you know, show up. You can't be passengers like what was said in the playoffs. You have to show up for a full game.
Yeah, and my kind of advice to Canuck fans out there when it comes to the way this team is performing this year, don't expect them to be the top team in the league. Don't expect them to be the top team in the division. Watch them play and you'll see specifically the effort is there. The fact that they're able to score goals against some of the best goalies in the league. I just watched Bobrovsky playing before I came today, and he was stopping everything coming his way. He's a good goalie. If you get 5 past Bobrovsky, your team has something offensively. It's just the defensive side of things that they will correct and they will fix. I mean, they've got one of the best defensemen in history coaching the team. I think we're going to be okay defensively. It's just a matter of getting the pieces to work, getting players back again. So we need to stop the whole freaking rebuild talk.
Temper expectations.
Let's really pump the brakes here, guys. This team will get it figured out, and I think you'll see. This is me saying something on the record. They will be a playoff team this year. That's my prediction.
I predicted it before we started.
I love it.
For the season, so we'll see.
Well, gentlemen, I want to thank you again for another awesome episode. I think we got a lot in there.
We managed to cram it in.
We really did. And honestly, like, I wanted to add those things about the PWHL and the MLS playoffs and the, and of course, Vancouver Rise winning their championship, which is really incredible. So that's, you know, really great that we got to get all that stuff in. Next week, who knows what we'll talk about. You'll have to tune in and find out. Once again, for the Puck and Pod. My name is Joe.
My name is Brandon.
And I'm Paul.
We'll see you guys in the next one.